Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and this is MJ Network. After my sister Marcia Joyce, and this is going to be really very different. We're going to talk about book reviews, how you rate them, how you decide whether you're going to promote the book, and what happens if the book is really not up to snuff. What can I tell you? So we have four of my favorite people that are authorities in this. We have Jeff Bonds, Dick Belsky, Charles Soldberg, and Lee Matthew Goldberg. Hi, everybody, and I am ready. Dick, you won't review them, but you interview. So how do you decide whether to interview an author to promote a book after you receive it? And what happens if the book doesn't hold what you want, your interest? Is Dick there?
Hi, I'm here. I'm here, Fran.
Yeah. Oh, okay. What happens if you want to interview an author and you read the book and you really don't like it? What happens? What do you do? Do you interview them anyway, or do you decide to pass on it?
Well, in my case, Fran, I'm sorry, I'm just coming in here. I don't know, you know, what was said before. You know, in my case, there's really not a lot of options because I do most of my interviews for a magazine, The Big Thrill, and you know, so I'm assigned it, or I decide I want to interview the person. And there have been occasions where I've read the book and I was not thrilled, you know, excited about it, or I didn't have problems with it. Obviously, many of them I'd like. But yeah, I just go. I mean, I go ahead with the interview, and I don't convey that to the author. you know, I try not to convey it in the, you know, in the piece. Again, the kind of writing I do is not really reviewing it. It's like interviewing and giving information about the books and the author. And yeah, I mean, look, we all have taste, and you know, we pick up a book and we love it, or many times it's okay, and I'm sure you go through that too. Or you pick up a book and it's like, you know, whoa, I don't really like this at all. Now you have the option of not having somebody on your show if you don't like their book, but yeah, so
that's
I do a lot of it, yeah.
What about anybody else? What do you do if you don't really like the book? Do you review it? Do you send it back? Do you toss it? Or do you start reading it and review it anyway? And I write a summary. I won't write a negative review. What does anybody else do?
Well, I don't know if you know this, but I used to review books for the New York Times for over 20 years and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. And because all those books were signed, you couldn't ask for a book. They didn't allow that. There was always that chance of you not liking it, or then I remember many times thinking when I got the book, I would read it and I'd say, what editor ever thought this was a good enough book to be published? But I learned the lesson. The first review I ever did, a friend of mine was at the Times, and she called me up and said, I'd like you to review a book for us. And I'd never reviewed books before, but as a freelancer, you learn you never say no. And I read the book, and it was by a famous author by the name of Ring Lardner Jr., who'd written the screenplay for MASH. And the book, I'll never forget it, was called All for Love, and it was not very good. And so I struggled with the very question you're asking, because, like, who am I to say I don't like this book, or it's not written well, or whatever. And then I realized that my responsibility really was to the audience, to people who might plunk out $25 from me, and that it was only my opinion. It was one opinion. And I never thought I'd review another book. And so I wrote what I really thought about the book, thinking they'd maybe push it. But they did. And so for me, it was a lesson learned very early, just for me, and that was to really say what I think, and to be fair, because I know what goes into mm-hmm. writing a book, so I know how much trouble it is, and I always tried to find something good about it. But that's pretty much the way I just thought my responsibility at that point was to the audience, to the reader, to give my opinion.
Don't you think? And that's really interesting because one of the things mm-hmm. I was thinking about is I like you, Fran. I mean, if I don't like something, I'm not going to post a negative review or something on Amazon. You know,
yeah.
I don't do that. But the one exception might be if it is a prominent author, and Ring Lardner Jr. certainly was very prominent as a writer. But if mm-hmm. you know, like if Stephen King or Michael Connelly or some, you know, one of these really great. people, and they wrote a book that I think that would be the one, I think then it might be okay, because you're going to say, look, this guy's great, but this book particularly isn't his best. But to me, that's a lot different than some, you know, somebody writing their first novel and then somebody, you know, ripping them in a review, which I just find, you know, I find that distasteful.
Some places
I would agree. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, I would agree with that. Also, just because Stephen King, I mean, he gets so many reviews that the one review isn't going to mm-hmm. kill the book, basically, as opposed to, like, you know, an upcoming author that review really could make or break the book. I'm the same. I never would write a bad review on Amazon or Goodreads. And even if I have to blurb a book and I don't really love it, I wind up finding whatever I do like about it to make the blurb, basically. It's like the writers supporting writers kind of mantra.
I agree. I would never do it for Amazon or Goodreads or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about if you're paid to write a review. Then I think that it's for me at least, it's a different standard. But I totally mm-hmm. agree. I would not. What's the point of me writing a bad review for Amazon for a book? I mean, you know, it just mm-hmm. there's no point to it for me.
And you know, the thing about the author blurbs is that I was actually going to bring that up, and that's a really good point because mm-hmm. like a lot of you, I mean, I know you, Charles, and I'm sure the rest of you too. You know, you get a lot of requests for author blurbs because people are looking, you know, for names, and most of these, if you're coming to me for an author blurb, you're probably somebody, you know, pretty much starting out. You're not somebody mm-hmm. prominent, and I always say yes because I've been on the other side of that so much, and I've been mm-hmm. so appreciative of some of the people who've taken time to give me author blurbs. So I say, look, if you want my blurb, I'll read the book and I'll give you a blurb. And yes, what you said, you know, some of them aren't particularly good, but you try and pick the best parts out of it and help the other. But that's different than a review. You're not really lying. You're just kind of helping him to promote it.
What do you do, though, when a book has so many – I mean, I just reviewed one. when a book has so many critical grammar errors, punctuation, spelling, and the plot line is, you got to be kidding me, it's unbelievable. So what do you do then? I mean, I think only in all the years that I've been working with one particular tour group, I turned down the review and I turned down the interview. Because I said I couldn't put my name on something that was so poorly written and had so many grammar errors that I said I couldn't do it. And besides, I agree with you. I won't put a bad review on Goodreads or on Amazon, but I will put a summary on Goodreads and not rate it if I have to. So what do you do if the book is poorly written? I mean,
I would usually try to kind of go
read some
offline.
Of the ones I've been getting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been fortunate not to get, this is Jeff, to get too many of those. But it really, if it rose to that kind of level, I would probably try to do something offline or be in touch with the author and kind of gently suggest that maybe there was a skip stepped in the proofreading side and handle it that way rather than certainly, as others have said, kind of letting it rip with a, you know, with a two or three or one star review on Goodreads or Amazon, because, you know, you take it on faith that if the book goes out there into the wild, and it's like that there are plenty of others that will point that out. So I will always try to do those things privately offline.
And you know, Fran, there's I was going to say, there's just real quickly, there's two different, you mentioned two different
mm-hmm.
things. There's like a bad storyline, which is the author,
mm-hmm.
obviously.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's, I don't think you can do anything about that. That's, to me, it's like, that's his book and whatever you think. The grammar is, and all that stuff, I mean, that really involves the publishing company, and especially if it's a smaller publishing company, and many times that's, you know, not in the complete control of the author. I recently did an author blurb for somebody. I'm not going to say his name, but it's somebody, I know Charles and I both know, and I got it, and it was, they had a number of mistakes, grammatical mistakes,
mm-hmm.
and then the last pages were missing from the thing. I mean, he didn't,
oh, wow.
So I called, and I, you know, I just, like, I reached out to him and I said, do you know that this book just ends like in, you know, in mid paragraph there's no, and
mm-hmm.
he did not know that because it had been sent out by the publishing company. So I was able to, you know, I mean, I'm sure hopefully somebody would have catch it, but I was able to help him deal with a problem that really wasn't his fault. It was the, you know, the publisher's fault. So in that case, yes, with grammatical errors, I definitely would point them out, but not with the storyline because, they're, you know, that's the author's storyline, not mine.
Yeah, and I think that's a great service as a reviewer. I mean, I produce audiobooks for my titles, and there's one audiobook reviewer that I work with quite a bit, and I'll get his take early on. And he, after one of my titles, he kind of gave feedback that there was some audio quality issues with it. And he didn't just let it rip with the review, but he gave me that feedback, so I was able to go back to my audio producers. And it wasn't the kind of a sound quality thing that somebody like me with an untrained ear would catch even, you know, but he
mm-hmm.
had reviewed so many audiobooks that he really caught it, you know, and so when I went back to the audio producer, you know, they were able to go back and look at the information that he'd given me and get it fixed quickly before, you know, a lot of people had listened to it. So I think that is a real service that people across the reviewing spectrum can provide
mm-hmm.
because, as you say, it's not always in the author's purview, right?
You know, Fran, I think that it happens often with self-published
mm-hmm.
books, and I think that's a big mistake that people make who self-publish is that they don't hire professionals to do proofreading
mm-hmm.
or copy editing.
You're right. They don't even review it. They don't even edit it. They won't edit it. You have to pay to get it edited.
Right. I wanted to say something about, because I totally agree with Dick and about asking to be, you know, to blurb. I'm always flattered, but I have a friend who I kind of admire. If she doesn't like a book, she won't blurb it. She's incredibly honest. She won't, you know, this is just for blurbs. And I understand that stance because essentially your name is being used and, you know, and judged by the book. So I kind of wish I could do that, but I can't. I have a hard time saying no. But I really admire authors who do have standards and just won't put their name on a blurb just because they, you know, they know the person or they like the person. But I'm kind of a pushover.
Well, you know, Charles, a quick thing on that, one of my great disappointments. So I've had a lot of people we all know, Hank Felipe Ryan, Retail Coleman, Steve Barry, a lot of people who've given me blurbs, and I know you've gotten a lot of them too. But the one I always wanted was Sue Grafton, the late Sue Grafton. And I tried and I tried and I tried, and she finally agreed to read it. And she read one of my books, and and she got back to me and she said, I'm sorry, I just don't like this. I can't do it. You know, and it was a great disappointment, one of the great disappointments of my life. And obviously she's gone now because I really, really wanted that. But I really, you know, I was like, as you said, Charles, you have a great deal of respect that she, and you know, she wasn't saying it was bad. She said, look, it doesn't work for me, and I'm not,
right.
you know, she wouldn't put
right.
her name on it. And I always really respected her, and that, you know, that made me respect her even more, even though I was incredibly disappointed.
Right. I always say, when I ask for a blurb, I'll always say, look, I won't be offended if this is not your kind of book
right.
mm-hmm.
or whatever. I give them an out, and it's not about whether the book is good or not. It may not be, as Dick says, your kind of book, and so you don't want to blurb it. You still get hurt, though, right, Dick? I mean, it's still, you know, it still stings because you want everyone.
And the fact that, you know, the fact that she, and I, very unexpectedly, as far as I knew,
mm-hmm.
died, you know, a year or two later, makes it in some ways, because, you know, there's always that hope, well, maybe she would like my next one, you know?
Well,
yeah.
And
she wouldn't have died, Dick, if she liked your book. You know, that was just punishment.
And I will say this. I met her on a couple occasions, and she was, you know, incredibly nice. And, you know, everything about it was good, except I couldn't get that damn blurb out of her.
Yeah, well, what do you do? Like, I had an incident recently, like 2 weeks ago. I had asked a specific publishing company if they would publish Silent Voices. And the guy said it wasn't his type of book, blah, 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 and he gave me some hints to fix it. Okay, fine. And they wouldn't publish it. And then I said, you know, they said, well, I mean, we won't review it because I don't like the book. And they sent me his book to review last week. No, I'm serious. And I had to long and hard as to whether I wanted to review his book. And I sent the thing to the publishers. And, of course, my computer, my grammar check has a mind of its own. And I saved all the mistakes. And I said, oh, my God, I had to fix it because there were typos. I knew that, but it was my grammar thing and my computer. And I actually wrote a review. And I said, I didn't know. What would you do? He literally... And the book is good. He hated it. He said, I don't like this. I don't like that. And his publicist sent me the book, and he just sent it. Do you get ones where half the time I don't even know I'm getting a book. I mean,
I would want, or unless you were thinking maybe for your next book to give to them again, that there would be a chance. But if somebody really hated my book, I feel like, why am I going to do this thing for them, honestly? Like, there's so many other publishers out there. But I also never want to burn a bridge, so I don't know. It would be a dilemma I would have. I would have to really kind of weigh the pros and cons.
Thought I was rising above it and just said, what the heck, I'll do it anyway.
Yeah, you were being the better person in it, absolutely.
I try sometimes. What could I say? But what do you, I mean, seriously. And then what about these people? Oh, this is really killing me. Population Zero got some really good reviews and some, But what do you do when you know that there are people that are out there, you don't know who's asking them or telling them to do it? They just rate the book, but they never read it. And you know very well that they never read it. Or you get something stupid like, this is the worst book I ever read, but you know the person never read it. I don't answer those because I just ignore it. How do you deal with that? I mean, there are a whole bunch of people.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Brad. I'll tell you one friend, you know, my friend Reed, who Dick knows, and the others might too, is he'll get a lot of requests from people he doesn't know through agents or editors, and he'll always write back, has your author actually read any of my books? Because, you know, that's when he gets offended, when, not that he's asked, but someone will be asking just because of his name and have no idea of what they write. So, you know, that's kind of a problem for me, too.
Well, Charles, I think you probably do the same thing as me, though, too. Like, when I reach out to a prominent author, I mean, in Reed's case, I knew him beforehand, and I had read his books. But when I reach out to somebody, you know, I will specifically say why I'm reaching out to them. You know, like, you know, because of this book, I think you would like this book. I mean, I think that's really important to do, and not just you know, hit it blind, you know. So anybody that doesn't do that, I think, is making a big mistake, just sending out blanket things. Oh, please blurb my book.
Well, they do that to me all the time. I open the mailbox and I go like, huh? Where did this one come from? I mean, I received it's a New York Times bestselling book. It came out. The book is really interesting, and then the ending was like, you have to be kidding me. And then I thought about it, and I go, wait a minute, I got this. I actually figured out why the author did it. And I read a Kirkus review, and I read a Publishers Weekly, and they panned it. They thought it was like, you know, the ending made no sense or anything. And when I thought about it, I said, you know what, it does make sense. Maybe I just got an insight to something. I mean, that's hard. I'm reading, and I won't tell you whose it is. It's not out yet. It's a New York Times bestseller. Is a very popular book, and I'm reading the book today, and I'm saying, like, this makes no sense, and this doesn't need to be here, and that doesn't need to be here. And it's somebody that's, you know, well-known. What do you do with that? I mean,
Brad, I actually had something like that happen. When I was reviewing books for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, they sent me a book by the author Norman Rush, and I forget the name of the book, but it was getting an enormous amount of publicity and great reviews, and I read it, and I didn't particularly care for it. And one of the problems for me was that his narrator was a woman, and at one point she says, she's trying to explain loneliness, And she says, I was as lonely as a single sperm in the fallopian tube. And I thought, there's no woman in the world who will ever use that metaphor.
Yeah.
Never, ever. You know, she won't think of herself as a sperm in a fallopian tube. So the editor called me up after I wrote the review, and she said, do you know that you're the only one of two reviewers from major places that didn't like this book? The other was Jonathan Yardley of the Washington Post. And I said, well, you know, Jan, it's just the way I felt. And she laughed, and she said, I couldn't get past the second chapter. So, you know, but I was just honest about my taste, and it was getting all – I think it won the National Book Award that year. I might be wrong.
Well, you know, this isn't really reviews, but one thing I was a real eye-opener for me and was being, you know, and some of you probably have done this too, that if you're ever a judge in a contest, and I was a judge for, I think, best novel or best hardcover for Thriller Fest one year, and so you wind up reading, you know, 200 books, or at least starting 200 books, and many of them are really prominent bestsellers, as you point out, award, you know, things that are going to win awards, National Book Awards, all sorts of awards, and I was surprised. I mean, many of them obviously are really good, but I was surprised how some books that have, you know, have all this acclaim, and I'm reading them, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, and I find lines like you just mentioned about the, you know, it's like, wow, I mean, how could this even get in there? So it is interesting. Just because a book gets a lot of acclaim, I mean, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to like it.
Yeah, and that's the other thing about it. I always think it's confidence-inspiring to read, you know, even really well-thought-of and well-thought-of books. You know, it's such a big beast. There are always going to be passages or, you know, choices that the author made that, you know, you recognize that a lot of editors would take a red pen to very quickly. But, you know, in a work of that size, you know, you're not going to be perfect on every page. And I think it's always reassuring as a writer to see that in other people's work and to see that the work can still succeed despite a lot of those shortcomings.
And also I find, and I don't know if you guys do too, but I find sometimes there's a specific topic that will just turn me off to the point I can't read it.
Mm-hmm.
And it may just be me. And I'm going to mention a name here because there's a sort of positive ending to this, and that's Lisa Gardner, who's a big, you know, big prominent bestseller. And I had to read one of hers, and it was all about this woman who was being kept captive in a coffin for like a year and, you know, buried alive and all that. And I started reading it, and I can't read this. I just can't read this book. It's just... I just can't handle that kind of a scene. About a year ago, I had an opportunity to interview her for The Big Thrill, read another book of hers, which I was kind of dreading, thinking, oh, my God, I hope I can read this. And it was wonderful. You know, she was wonderful. You know, and I loved the book, and I loved talking to her. So sometimes it's just a topic that that hits you in a certain way. I know it does me, that you just, I won't read, you know, it could be something like cruelty to animals or children or something like that I'm just not going to read this.
I think the hardest
sometimes
book I had to read
you're...
last week was Discovering Twins. It's about the Holocaust. It's a true story. And I read it and I reviewed it, but I left out the part about the Holocaust. I couldn't write anything about it. I mean, it was so graphically depicted, it was okay. And they thought what I wrote was great. But is there ever a time when you review the book and you leave out, like, a specific part because it bothers you? My grandmother was in a concentration camp, so I couldn't read that part. I just totally skip right over it.
I think also sometimes it's what you're potentially going through at the time you're reading a book. Sometimes that book is not the best for you at that time. I mean, the Holocaust, I understand never. Like, I have family also in the camps. But, yeah, I'll find sometimes my mood, and I don't review books professionally, but I'll find that if I pick up a book sometimes, it's just not for me at that time. Where if I was on the beach, maybe I would love it, but because it's, you know, the middle of winter, my mood is not apt to, like, really enjoy it at the time.
Well, what about
how
you rate the book? How do you decide whether to give it 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5? And I had an author once call me, and I couldn't believe it. I said to her, I'm not going to rate your book because you've got 150 pages, like you said, at a line. You've got 750 typos and errors. And she said, well, why won't you give me 5 stars? She said, let me put it to you this way. I'm going to give you, I was like, are you kidding me? I said, I'm going to give you 1 star. I said, as a matter of fact, I'm not even going to review your book. I'm going to delete the review. So, oh, well, how could you do that? I said, because you need to call your publishing company and tell them to republish the book. Because there were like three chapters were redone and whatever. So what do you do then when they don't want to hear you? How do you rate a book if it's really that bad? That's hard for me.
Well, there's this difference between doing books for as a favor or whatever for Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Goodreads, as opposed to being paid to review a book, or even not paid to review a book, but it's in a newspaper or a magazine, and so I try to be as honest. First of all, I don't like that whole star thing. But quite frankly, if it's a friend of mine and if it's for Amazon or a place like that, and I think the book is really good, I'll give it 5 stars because I know as an author how much that helps the author. But it would be different if I were being paid to do it. I thought it was a 4-star, not a 5-star. Not that I like the ratings anyway for that.
I just like to write the review and not rate it. I wish I could do that. Read a book. But somebody actually did this to me, and I wrote a couple of reviews, and somebody told Amazon I was getting paid to do reviews, which, of course, if I did, I'd be very rich. No, I don't. And it took a while for me to convince them that I didn't get paid to do a review. And you know, obviously you're not allowed to. I know Kirkus and Publishers Weekly compose editorial reviews, but basically if Amazon finds out you get paid, supposedly they kick you off. That's what I was
told.
And they should, right. No, they it was not me. So what about looking at the cover and the title of the book and the flap of the book? Do you use that to help you decide whether you're going to be interested or whether the book is going to interest you? Because...
Yeah, I would say definitely. If I'm in a bookstore, the cover is the first thing. I mean, if I know the author or read, obviously, other books, so they all gravitate towards that. Browsing around and I see an amazing cover, it definitely draws me to pick it up. Sometimes it's deceiving. Sometimes it's the book with the best cover, not the best book. But it's something I would think about on my own and a conversation I'll have with all my publishers where I want to be a part of the cover process.
For me, it's two things. Number one, a really great title will pull me in. You know, I mean, many times the book won't relate to it, but there was one I always thought I may have it not quite right, but Laurie Rader Day, do I have her name right? Anyway, wrote The Day I Died. You know, so I pick up I look at the title, I go, wow, that's an interesting title. And then I'm a big first page guy. You know, I can pick up the first page of a book in a bookstore, and I generally can get a feel from that first page of whether I'm gonna, because if you get buried in the first graph or two, it's probably not for me. Now you could make mistakes because the book could still be good, But when you got an opening, we could do another whole show on this, but when you have that opening grabber line that just draws you right in to the book, Michael Conley, the poet, Death Is My Beat, that's the first line. I mean, okay, you can't stop reading after that. So to me, that first page and sometimes that first paragraph is what will determine for me.
Well, Michael Conley's book is really good. I read Dark Hours. They sent that to me.
Yeah, I'm
too bad he won't do an interview with me. I just finished, and it's funny because you didn't get such great reviews, and I thought the book was good, it was okay. The Judge's List by John Grisham, I just finished that one too in about 2 hours, and it was interesting because I said to the publicist, why don't you let him do an interview with me? Because if you read what the people are writing, it might help if you let me interview him. The book was really interesting, and the ending was like, you got to be kidding me. So I don't know. What happens also, I mean, this is my other gripe. What happens when you get a book and the font is so small you can't see it? That's my other thing. I wish people would send me large print. It would help.
I have a hard time getting mass market for that reason. The lines are just too close together.
That just came up last night on a Zoom I had with 3 other writers, and it was...
Really?
Well... Yes, and it was one of the writers said that he was really upset with his publisher because, and he told the word count, whether it was 75,000 or whatever, and they jammed it into 200 pages. He said by making, and that's what's happening now lately, especially with the paper shortage, is that publishers are making the print smaller and much smaller margins, and making the book a lot shorter than it normally would be. He said that his book normally would have been about 300 pages, and it was 220 because they did that. So what you're talking about really is a problem now about the font or the size of it or how many words they cram on a page, and it's purely economics.
Well, all I know is I can tell you what I do sometimes, and I hate to do it because it costs a lot of money, is if the font is really so small and it's an author that I really want to read, I call up my friends someplace and I say, could you please print this out for me in large print and get permission to print it out in large print? I do. And then there are some people that don't realize that it costs a lot of money to get a book printed out. They'll send me the PDF and say my publisher is not sending.
Fran, now what you can do is get the e-book of it. Most books are e-books because there you can control.
Fran doesn't read on her phone. Fran used to have the print in front of me so I could destroy the book and give it to my UPS guy when I'm done.
You have a lot of courage to bring up the e-book topic to Fran, because I've done it, and she has made it very clear to me she has no use for it. But it is true, Fran. That is one of the advantages, because you can adjust things and you can see it better. I understand all your things, but it's not a problem on e-book.
Yeah, I can't do it. It bothers my eyes. I get eye strain. And I have to have the book in front of me. I think it's because my mother made me read Noam Sirius 10 books every week, and she wanted to know what I read, and she made me take notes on the book, which is probably what I still do when I read, the same thing. I take notes on the book, destroy the book, and what can I say? And I know that Dix and Charles, and you got all of your books are very popular, especially with my UPS guy who brings my books to my door, even though he's not supposed to, because I give him all of yours when I'm done. See, it does pay off to be nice. What can I say? But what can I say? What genres won't you review? I mean, the only one I won't review is pornography and erotica, and I won't. What genres do you prefer to review? And which ones don't you want to review? You see, I have only one advantage over everybody, because I don't have to pay for the books. They just send them. It makes it easier.
So, I mean, I guess romance I wouldn't, but it's not like I'm getting any romance authors asking me. But that would probably be the only one. Anything else, I'll review erotic. I don't care. Anything else is fine.
Anybody else? What do you prefer to review?
Romance, fantasy, sci-fi for me. It's just not my thing, so I wouldn't normally read it.
I also don't think I'm probably qualified to make judgments on anything other than mystery thrillers, which is what I write and which I'm a fan of. And not, I mean, certainly on romance, which is certainly a niche of its own, and I really don't know enough about it to make a judgment. And to some degree, that's even true with just novels, literary novels. I'm not sure that I really would be confident in reading one and then expressing an opinion. So for me, when it involves my opinion or my trying to have some expertise, it really would stay with mystery thrillers and, you know, of that general genre.
I can't stand self-help and inspirational. And I just got one, and I go like, oh, God, no.
Now, if you get into nonfiction, that's something else. I mean, I think with nonfiction, that opens up a lot of possibilities. But in terms of fiction, I think, for me, it's more limited.
No, what about children's books? Would you do those? Those are my favorite. Because they take me like 10 minutes to read and 20 minutes to write a good review. No, no one would read children. Yeah, I love children's books. They're fun. The ones I don't love sometimes are the YA books with this going forward, going backwards, whatever, and sometimes I just want to cry and not read it at all. And I feel bad because somebody sent it to me and I didn't even know I was getting it. Do you ever get books in the mail and you don't know you're getting it? It's just a surprise and the author automatically sends them or the publisher sends them?
No, I haven't had that situation. I would be happy to review a children's book. I've got 9 and 11-year-old daughters, and I've read a ton of the genre to them. So if I got one, I'd be happy to do it. But children are much more forgiving reviewers, I would say, in general than adults. So it might be a little bit of a reach to get inside their head and say insightful things that would be helpful to potential readers there.
Well, Star Passage is a book. It's like a Star Trek book. I just reviewed it. It's very good. And it's for kids going back and forth in time. And there's an Indian from 1400 and something that comes in, helps them out to solve this mystery, whatever. It was actually interesting. So sometimes you get one that's really, really, really good, and sometimes, I don't know, then they're not. But, I mean, so go on, Dick.
I was going to say, if I get a book out of, and I don't get a lot, but on occasion some publisher will send me a book and, you know, and they'll say, ask for a review or whatever. And I sort of operate on the same theory as what, you know, we were talking about with the blurbs. It's just out of the blue, I've never heard of the author, I've never heard of the publisher. I mean, I just say, you know, like, no, like, sorry, I don't do this or whatever. Now, on the other hand, if somebody were to send me a book, even if I know them, and they said, look, we've read your Clark Carlson books, this author has a woman character, we think you'd relate to her, then I would be much more inclined, obviously, to think about trying to do something with them. But it's just like with blurbs. When people just send you blank books, now, that's the business you're in, but I'm not in that business. I only want to read books that somebody has come to me because they know me or they know my work.
I don't know where these people find me. I get emails from publicists I've never heard of, and they say, well, we found you. I go, that's very nice. If I ask them where they found me, it's usually they read my reviews or in the book directory of somebody or other and go, like, okay. But before I forget, on Thursday, Marilyn Levinson, a.k.a. Allison Brooke, will be here with Death on the Shelf, On the Knife, Silence in the Library. And on the 11th, somebody we all know and love, I'm doing a show in honor of Veterans Day with John Land and former Navy SEAL Stephen Giblin, Walking in the Mud. And the same day, I'm going to be doing something else with someone else named Marcia Casper Cook. I'm excited. And on the 15th, I have the 1 Mile Shore. And on the 17th, I have Dick Belsky and Silent Island.
All right.
That should be fun. Yeah, and then I have a panel show on the 18th, and then the 23rd, Nancy Allen, who writes with James Patterson, Power of Attorney. It should be really fantastic. So I have some more questions on the back of this paper somewhere. Okay, here we go. Basically, you decide what you want to read. So, Lee, you had helped me a lot when I wrote Population Zero. You gave me some ideas on what you really, really did help me because I followed what you said. Do people ever ask you before the book gets reviewed to read the book and give them some helpful hints? Because that was a good thing that I did, but, of course, there are people that liked it. And, unfortunately, I won't say the publishing company did nothing to help me publish it. I actually Karen Vaughn is Southern Owl, but they're publishing, and she's been promoting my books. I pay her a certain amount a year with her group, and it's worth it. And she, you know, does this whole bunch of stuff on Facebook for me, and it's not a lot of money. She's really good. But how do you decide, you know, how do you get your book out there? How do you get your work out there? I mean, I write a book with you, and 10 people read it right away. I'd be like, that's very nice. But how do you read, if somebody asks you to read and critique their book before they get it published, would you do that?
Yeah, I mean, usually for me, it would be somebody who I knew, I think a random person I don't think I would do that for, but I've done that a lot for writers either starting out that I've known. But what I tell them up front is that, you know, unlike if it was a published book, I'll be 100% honest. So if there's things that need work, I have an editing background as well, and I'll tell them exactly how I feel. So if they're open to that, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I've had where I've said that, and then I've hurt somebody's feelings, and it was kind of like, you know, I gave you a heads up before. You know, you could take my advice. You don't have to. But, yeah, I think if you're doing that and the book hasn't been published yet, you're not doing anybody a service if you tell them it's good, if it's not.
No, I agree with you, and actually you helped me a lot because this way I was able to flesh out the characters. And I don't get insulted if somebody tells me that something should be better. I get really upset when the publishing company says, oh, it's great, or that paragraph, just take that out and the book is perfect, when I know very well it's not. That's the point. I mean, when I had Sisters published, I mean, the publishing company said it was very nice and they did nothing to publish it too. So what do you do then?
Well, I mean, just back to the original point about, you know, when somebody comes to you, and obviously I agree, it's like when somebody you know comes to you pretty well, it's one thing.
Yeah.
I was approached by about a year or two ago by someone else who I didn't know that well, but I had met at a mystery conference, and, you know, we had talked, but it wasn't like a close thing, but she knew me and she knew my background, and she was writing a book that featured a reporter, and she said, would you read my book? And because of all of my journalism background, that I've been in media all my life, and tell me if the reporter stuff is realistic. And so I was very willing to do that, given that kind of a situation. And the truth of it was, it was an interesting book, but I thought she had the reporter stuff all wrong, you know, and I didn't think a lot of it made sense. And I told her. Now, the book eventually got published, and I didn't read the final version, so I don't know whether she took the advice, but she seemed very happy. I said, look, you know, reporter would do this, reporter would do that. So something like that, where you have some expertise, I think is really helpful. But again, you know, I'm a great believer in, you know, I would never tell anybody what they have to do in their book because it's their book. I don't do writers groups. I don't do beta readers or anything because in the end, the story is my story, and I don't want to impose my story on someone else.
No, I understand. I reviewed for a company, I won't say what, and every time they sent me a children's book that I didn't know about, I took it and I read it right away and I reviewed it. So when I was writing Sisters, Two Sisters from the Bronx, I asked this particular person if the publishing company would, you know, be nice enough to publish it. And he said, well, you need to write a timeline and blah, blah, blah. The stories are really good, but I'm going to take 2 years, 2.5 years to get it published. And I said, in that case, don't worry about it. And I said, if you read the book and gave me some, you know, criticism, I said, it didn't need a timeline. And I put the timeline in, and I was sorry that I did. There was nothing wrong with it. And he said, oh, well, you know, it'll take me 2.5 years to do it. I said, well, it might take me 4 before I review another book for you. I stopped doing it. And let me tell you something. He probably should be sorry because I haven't seen anything out there that they've been reviewing or whatever. So we have a couple of more minutes. What else can you learn? What else can we tell somebody that's starting out to review something or to write something? When you get a book and you are quoted, do you allow the person to quote your review on Amazon or something, or do they have to ask your permission to quote you or to use a blurb from your book? Me, I don't care, but some people do. They say that you need to. In other words, if I put in a thing on Just Reviews, does somebody have to ask my permission before they can quote what I wrote?
No.
Especially if it's really
good.
They do, right?
No. They don't. No.
They don't, right?
No, they don't need permission.
I hope not, because I put the stuff you write about me on mine all the time. And I don't ask your permission.
I certainly don't care. I get very excited.
It's out there.
No, then I send it to my family who doesn't read my stuff, and I go, you see, look what I did. They don't. They don't need permission or anything. But what happens if somebody...
If it's a big author and I've gotten a blurb, Fran, I'll ask permission to, like, across my socials, just because I feel like that's the nice thing to do. Like, is it okay if I, you know, and, you know, all the time they say yes. But I feel like for a certain level of an author, just out of respect, I'm like, hey, I'm going to tweet you. You know, is that okay?
No, I've had authors whose publicist email me and said, is it okay if we quote something for your review? And I probably read the book 10,000 years ago last Wednesday. I go, oh, of course, no problem. Don't worry about it. But let me see it first because I want to know what I wrote that you think is so wonderful.
Right.
That you did that. Yeah, it's like really crazy. But what are other criteria? People review books, and how do you feel when – I mean, I get upset sometimes when I get a negative review because somebody didn't read the book and they just said, when my first book on Faces Behind the Stone, somebody wrote – I gave you 2 stars because I didn't understand what the book is about because I didn't read the whole book. I said, maybe if you did, you might have understood it. and I never answered those. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. And what do you do when somebody gives you a negative review, but you know very well that they didn't read it? I try not to answer those.
I think rule one of that, whether you think they read it or not, that I've always been taught, and not we can't always do this, but we should try, is don't respond to a bad review, because it just takes you down a rabbit hole of bad things. I heard Michael Conley talk about this once. Believe it or not, he got a bad review, and he said he tried to, he responded to it, and he's just like, you never, you don't do that, because unless you want to get in a debate with somebody, and I that's not something I think really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people doing that can be driven by, Goodreads has a lot of mechanisms for, having a, your reading goal, or, there's a certain amount of books people are trying to get through and review in 2 months, their reading challenge for the month, and you can almost feel it that, they'll maybe rush through things and take a book that really isn't the kind of book that they're likely to like, and give a low review or something like that, just because it's outside of their genre, something like that. So I think there are some outside factors that can create some of those bad actors on the review sites as well.
Yeah, it's a hard one. See, you're between a rock and a hard place. And I know that there are people that just, for the fun of it, just write, I hate this book, or I don't like it, and whatever. And the only ones I did call Amazon, and I said, you've got to take this off, it's insulting. And the person didn't read the book. It's almost as if somebody paid them to say something nasty. And Amazon needs to, what do you think about this? I mean, I even said it to the person on the phone. There's a difference between a book review and somebody's opinion. I said, so why can't you, separate those that people that actually read the book and review it as far as somebody's opinion? I don't think that they should be together. Or maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think there definitely is a phenomenon of people kind of, leaving reviews for reasons that have nothing to do with the quality of the book. I know the last J.K. Rowling's book that came out, I went online to check the reviews for my kids to see if it was a book that I thought that they would like, that I should get for their Kindles, and she was flooded with negative reviews almost before the book was out, on a political basis, right? People not liking things that she'd said apart from writing, and that, I think as somebody who goes to a site for information about the quality of a book is certainly frustrating.
That is. My doctor called me 2 weeks ago, and he said, I met this girl in Fordham. She's a New York Times bestselling author, and I told her about you. I go, and why would you do that to me? And I sent to the publicist, and they sent me the book. It was really sad. It was really good. It's sad. And I emailed him, and I said, I hope you get the book to read it, because you made me read it and review it. What can I say? It was probably one of the saddest books I've ever read. And the character in the book has a terminal illness, and she's trying to whatever. Do you ever find a book that is just like it brings you to tears and you just can't do it? Because that one just about did. It was kind of hard.
I don't know. It takes a lot for me to cry from a book, so I feel like if
only
a book does, like, great book. I'm almost amazed if it. Like, I remember reading Cormac McCarthy's The Road and like weeping at the end, and like that brought me to tears. But I was so happy that I was brought to tears. But I'm a cold person, so that's why.
No, it was a box of tissues at the end, and I knew how it was going to end. I could feel how it was going to end, and it was a box of tissues at the end. But did you ever read, like the one I'm reading right now, I can almost bet that the ending is going to be like, are you serious? And this, the one I just got, as I said, this is a New York Times author, and it's a married couple. You think they're a married couple, and they buy this house, and this house is like got spirits in it of some type. And you know that the husband might be trying to gaslight the wife who's pregnant, and basically, the house was a house for mentally disturbed people. And at the end, it sort of brings it back to this particular place. And you wonder if the girl imagined everything or if this is where she really was the whole time. It's like weird. But I think I sort of got it. But did you ever read a book where you just say, I have no idea? We have about 8 minutes. Do you ever read a book and say, I have no idea?
Yes, I have.
That's hard.
And I still wrote a review of it. It was one of these postmodern authors where none of the characters had names. They just had letters for names. Hmm. And I struggled to get through it. And I never skim if I'm reviewing, if I'm being paid to review anything. And I tried not to, but I couldn't help it with that book. So the answer is yes. And I wrote what I thought was an honest review.
For me, the most disappointing thing is not something that's so far-fetched as an ending or like, oh, my God, how did they do that? I mean, that you might find that uncomfortable, but the worst thing for me, and I've read a few of these recently, is when the ending is just nothing. It's just disappointing, and the author has kind of built, and you're going through, and you're thinking, okay, what's the twist? What's going to happen? Okay, you're building all this drama through the book, and you're sort of okay with that, and you're thinking there's a payoff at the end, and then there's no payoff, and I find that actually more irritating than when you find an ending that is, I don't understand or unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm like I wasted my time going through this book there was no point to it.
Well, I'm lucky because I've never had an author tell me that I didn't get what they were trying to say. You know, but sometimes it takes you a little bit longer. I read this and I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, everybody that did a review, an early review, said the same thing about the ending. Then when I read it, I said, you know what, it does make sense. I got it. And I was very impressed with myself that I got it.
Mm-hmm.
But what can I say? So before we close, okay, everybody, what's coming out that I don't have? What's next for you? Lee, what's happening?
I forget. Have I sent you my latest one, Stalker Stalk?
I don't have that one, do I?
If not, I'll send you that. So, yeah, that came out about a month ago, 2 months ago. I'll send you that for now.
Well, I got to get these books because the post office isn't bringing anything. It's really scary. I mean, I won't say the one that I'm reading, but it's a New York Times author. And Gavin Gowan, I'm reading Paradise Cove. It's really, really, really good. I read like three at one time. And then there's a YA book that I just stare at a lot. And thank God for Ocean View because they send me everything. So, Charles, I know, and I got a few, and I put them in my pile, and every time I start to read them, well, what can I say?
Did you read the new Matt Coyle? That I just finished that because I'm interviewing him. The new Matt Coyle book.
I read
really
that
good.
3 months ago. I read it a while ago.
Way ahead of
and
me. Yeah.
I love The Last Redemption, and he's doing an interview on November 30th with guess
okay.
who?
Okay. All right.
I hope so. Yeah. I sent him the questions. I love Rick Cahill. He's one of my favorite people.
Yeah, so he's the most prominent Ocean View guy, and I'm actually interviewing him too soon.
Yeah, I love Ocean View Publishing because I never know what's going to come. And if I see something that's due in May or March or whatever, I just stick it in my, you got to read this pile. So Paradise Cove is also Ocean View, and what happened was I got the book, and I didn't know I was getting it, and then I contacted the author, and I said, now you have to come on my radio show in April.
Is that Gavin Goodwin?
Yes, Gavin Goodwin.
Yes, he's a friend of mine.
I love Roscoe, yeah, and I love – this one really starts out really great, and it got me from the first page, and if it doesn't get friend from the first page in the mystery thriller –
right.
It's so sad. So, Charles, when is your new book? You said you had two coming out, I think?
No, I have one coming out April, and then my agent is sending around another that I finished. But the one in April is a new PI character.
So you're going to have to let me know when it's coming out so I could put you in my schedule. And Jeff said he pushed back. And, Dick, what's coming out after? Is it Dana Perry? Was it something else?
Well, no. I just turned in the next Claire Carlson book. So that'll be out in 2022, but probably not until the fall. My current one out is Beyond the Headlines, which came out this year. And as you know, I have two books written as Dana Perry out, one of which Silent Island we'll be talking about. That just came out this month. So we'll be talking about that, obviously, later when I'm on again.
I love that book. It's one of my favorites. Oh, and before I forget, we have another minute or two. Next month, but I'm not giving away who. the Just Reviews 2021 Awards for whatever categories I came up with this time that are different will be announced next month on Facebook or wherever I figure out how to announce them. Somebody is creating the awards for me because a friend doesn't do awards. She, you know, it's better if somebody professional does it. And there are several authors that will be getting awards for all sorts of strange things that I've decided to categorize. It doesn't necessarily have to be for a book. It could be for something else that the person does that's outstanding. So you never know. As soon as I get the awards, I will send you, or whatever it is, send you everybody that the awards, and then everybody in the whole world can tell me, I hope I did the right thing. No, it's like, it took me a while to really think about it, and I said, no, there are certain people whose books are exemplary all the time, so I will do that. So I want to thank you very, very much. This has been a lot of fun, and if anybody has one to do, I'm doing a panel. Well, actually, Dick, I think you're in on this one. On December 8th, we're talking about how the pandemic affects publishing. And
right.
Yeah, that one, yeah. And on November 18th, Alan Jacobson and Tim Ahrens and T.J. O'Connor and, yeah, where's my list, are going to be talking about the dark side of the character. And that should be interesting. I've never done that before. But everybody stay safe. Everybody have a great day. Thank you so much. Everybody, great day, and bye.
Thanks, Fran.
Thank you, Fran. Bye-bye, all.
Take care.